Herzlich willkommen zum Inside Legal Podcast der Alba Patera Rechtsanwälte. Wir berichten über erwähnenswerte Themen aus Kanzlei, Wirtschaft und Recht. Heute mit einem Ausschnitt von einem Panel der renommierten Branchenkonferenz, dem International Music Summit in Spanien im vergangenen April, zu dem unser Partner Rechtsanwalt Martin Rüssmann als Sprecher geladen war. Thema des Panels: The Defining Legal Framework Around AI. Mit den Fragen: Übernimmt die künstliche Intelligenz den Musik- und Kreativbereich? Was können Urheber tun, um sich zu schützen? Was ist der Stand der Regulierung in Europa und der Welt? Und was bedarf es in einer sich immer schneller entwickelnden und verändernden Zukunft eigentlich? Über dieses und vieles mehr sprachen die Panel-Teilnehmer. Und nun viel Spaß mit dem Ausschnitt.
Welcome to the IMS Ibiza 2023 podcast series. IMS, also known as the International Music Summit, is one of the most influential global gatherings of the electronic music community. Established 16 years ago, it unites artists, creators, and industry leaders at its annual summit in Ibiza to help shape the future direction of the genre. Its tagline for the 2023 summit was Face the Future, and this series highlights some of the best sessions and insights from the summit, reflecting what happens next to this ever-growing global electronic community.
Hi guys, once again, my name is Declan McGlynn. I'm a music technology journalist and consultant for the likes of Rolling Stone, DJ Mag, Resident Advisor, BBC, and many more. I guess we have the daunting challenge today of trying to help you guys maybe define a legal framework around AI. AI is one of the most divisive topics of our time, and the revolutionary nature of the technology introduces unprecedented legal hurdles for artists, producers, labels, publishers, and even policymakers. As the tech moves faster than anyone can keep up, how can we put the guidelines and guardrails to protect the interests and IP of our industry so that the work of artists and rights holders isn't exploited? We're going to attempt to demystify some of those challenges and explain where we are, what's being developed, and where we need to go in the future. But first, can you guys just introduce yourself, starting with Gareth?
Hi. Hello, everyone. I'm Gareth. I am the founder of a consultancy called Sonorous. We help music tech startups build partnerships with music brands. I do a lot of stuff in emerging technology. I co-chair, along with Martin, the AFEM Emerging Technology Group. And I think I'm not a lawyer is probably the first and biggest thing to make a clear distinction about. However, I spent 3-4 years within an AI music startup building the commercial business. So I have a perspective, if you like, from the other side. I'm sure we're going to have a super fascinating conversation. So,
good afternoon. Martin Rüssmann. I'm attorney and partner of Alba Patera Law Firm. We're based in Hamburg in Germany. We're a boutique law firm specialized in media entertainment industries. And of course, technology is a big part of it.
Hi, I'm Greg Pryor. I'm also, unfortunately, a partner in a law firm. I work at Reed Smith. I'm based in London. We're a vast amount of lawyers, 2,000 lawyers, and I run our entertainment and media division.
Okay, so let's start by clearing up the current situation. I think it's important to give people context as to what's actually happening. It kind of feels that right now we're at the precipice of things, where the law is struggling to catch up with the technology. Does that sound accurate?
Yes. I think there's some other issues. One of the challenges, if you spend any time working in AI, is the term AI. There's different technologies and different processes, and they use rights in different ways. So there's a lot of ambiguity just because we're not all talking the same things half the time. As a case in point, as Alok was saying, you know, there's been processes and companies building systems that have been trained on music and assets they've created. Meng was talking about this from BandLab's point of view earlier. That is, you know, substantively different than what we're seeing that has caught everyone's attention around models trained on Drake's vocals or music that is or is not potentially scraped to train models. So I think, you know, you have some challenges there. I think one of the other challenges that doesn't get talked about a lot is often a lot of these companies are building on top of technology or models that exist elsewhere. So those models are often built in, say, by research teams in universities very regularly. The amount of visibility on the training data that goes into those models that are then built on top of, like kind of Lego, if you like, is tricky. And that's generally not in the frame of most conversations is some of that. So I think, you know, to the point about the legal framework side of things, I think there's issues around, like, what do we do around copyright and songs that are created and or distributed? But then there's a whole bunch of things that are slightly unprecedented in terms of things we need to think about in terms how we build the rails that will allow companies and creativity and all these things to kind of happen. So, yeah, so that would be my take. So
I think it's important to mention that AI, also in music, is not completely new phenomenon. Yeah. I mean, the very serious models that has been executed go back to the 80s, I think, 1980s, where it started. And since then, also the legal science actually looked into this topic and have an opinion about it when it comes to machine-made music. So I think it's just important to mention, law is always a bit behind the technology, but we are, I think, in law not as far away than you would expect. Yeah. So, yeah.
What were the conclusions they came to at the time?
Say again?
What were the conclusions that law firms came to at the time, originally in the 80s?
Well, it's a process, of course. Like it's similar like today, and each time in decade there are new developments and raising new questions and problems. Of course, some of the problems today that we will talk about today, but the result of the discussion is still the same as a general rule that everything that is made by AI. Generated AI is what is made by a machine, not by a human being, is not protected under copyright. Yeah, that was in the past the general thought on it. Yeah, today we have to make differentiation because we have different use cases for it, and we have to differentiate between just generally generated AI generated content, but also AI assisted content. Yeah, and that's an important differentiation that we face today, also with the development in technology.
Yeah, Gregor,
I've got to take an alternative viewpoint somehow, make it more interesting. I think we're definitely at an inflection point, right? Because you're seeing litigation, large-scale litigation, trillions of dollars, disputes around whether the training is legitimate. You're seeing very quick changes of position in English law, in European law. You're seeing no homogeneity across different territories around how AI is treated. So there are some countries where you can freely train, and there are other countries where you absolutely cannot train. So I think it's 100% at an inflection point. When you've got Lucian Grange, when you've got Michael Nash making statements about copyright law, I mean, of course, for sure. I think, and how we deal with it, I think it's going to be a really interesting time for our industry.
Yeah, you mentioned assisted AI and generative AI. I mean, when you've mentioned that something created by an AI, in inverted commas, isn't subject to copyright, at what point is there enough human involvement that it then becomes something that's created by a human with AI assistance rather than AI-created content? Do we know that answer?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the territory we talk about and the applicable laws. But from a German perspective and slightly European perspective, as of today, the opinion is that there must be a human interaction, intellectual effort in the process of the creation. Yeah, and also maybe advice to everyone here, the European Commission suggested a so-called four-step test where everyone can check themselves if what they are doing is actually copy under protection of copyright. Yeah?
Just on that four-step so not a lawyer, right? But that for that framework for sort of kind of looking at a challenge, how you challenge one of these things to understand the kind of veracity of like any infringement or issues. One of those steps is as well as the human interaction. One of those steps is creative decision making. And that's like a kind of weird gray area, because like one of the other things that gets really interesting about this space is you're not like, people talked about it before, like we tend to, the other challenge with the AI thing generally is we personify AI as a thing, right? So we assume the bad machine did a bad thing and not a person did a thing. But one of the things that's interesting with what we're seeing, I think from a music point of view, is that that creative intention piece or decision making, like where's that actually happening? Because some of that might be algorithmic, but like some of that is happening driven by that's followed from the creator of how those algorithms or programs, and where does that creativity come from? How do they own anything to do with copyright? But then actually, if you look at the ghostwriter type stuff, actually, well, that's close to a music fan turning around, making something and doing something with a piece of music.
Yeah, this regard, so this four-step test, I recommend everyone to look that up. It's very easy to go through it, and it just helps, a four-step test. It says it's important that the human being, the creator, using the AI tools, actually have to have a choice of free will in the creation process. And they differentiate between three stages. The concept phase, what we can all imagine, it's when we have some ideas and we have the tool and we combine them together. Then we have the execution stage, what is actually a black box for everyone, because that's the what the AI tool provider, what's their secret, and that will be later a topic also in this talk, that it's very intransparent what happens actually in this execution phase. And then there's the redaction phase, the last phase, where you make edits, adjustments, whatever. And the European Commission assumes that in the first stage and in the third stage, you need to have a free the freedom of choice as a human being. And then if you have that, then it's likely to be protected.
Yeah? How do you prove that though?
Literally, that's it's also a recommendation to actually document the whole creation process. Yeah, so every step that you do with this tool, whatever AI tool you use, you document it in the creational process. What, in fact, it doesn't relate it to AI, but it's a fun fact. Like Ed Sheeran does that for a decade already with all of his songwriting, because he was very smart about it when his career took off. That he might face problems with copyright infringement, whatnot, but potentially also new technologies. So he documents, even today, every step of his songwriting process.
Yeah, but he has been sued twice, including now. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but that even helps him then, of course, to prove maybe that it's wrong. Yeah? So.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone in this room who's a producer or who might have a catalog that they're protective of, what kind of advice would you give them going forward in terms of trying to control the use of their catalog in training models? Or is the cat already out of the bag?
I mean, just quickly on that, like, I don't know. I can, from a legal point of view, I can't quite probably provide any advice. But one thing I would say, one of the things with most of the AI music companies that are out there, I think this idea that they've all been scraping data off streaming services is frankly bullshit. Like, I don't think most companies in space are doing this. Most companies that have been in this for any period of time have been building with an eye to how to kind of navigate some of this space and think through how you do some of the, you know, how do you build with cleaner data? Where are the risk points? I think with the vocal stuff, it's kind of slightly different. I mean, we saw the open kind of source models for lots of these kind of algorithms that you can literally go and dump and work with in relatively easily. That has, I think, sort of changed things a little bit. But I think, you know, some of it's a little overstated, right?
Like, so. Yeah. But having said that, yesterday, this is how up to date we are, Daniel Ek came out and said that he is willing to work with majors to kind of stop some of the outpouring of AI music on Spotify, as did the CEO of Deezer just this week as well. And I'll just read you another quote from Michael Nash, who you mentioned before, who's the EVP of Digital Strategy at UMG, and said, "The bottom line is a lot of AI developers are just ignoring the ethics of ingesting the creative work of others, or they're simply justifying it with what we view as a dangerous distortion of the idea of fair use. That is absolutely not going to hold up." So again, UMG taking quite a firm stance on that one. I mean, let's talk about fair use then. I mean, as we talked about already, it's quite hard to prove the intentions unless you're documenting your creative process. And I would say most people don't actually do that. Maybe they'll start from today. But in terms of fair use, are models fair use? Is this creative enough?
I think in America, the principle of fair use for AI training is pretty well established. Okay. Michael knows that. That's why he's saying that.
Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, I mean, he has to take a position because, you know, the fair use test under American law is different to the kind of stated statutory exceptions under European law. And then there are other countries where training is widely considered fair game. So Singapore is an example. Yeah. So you've got another, which bears no relation to music, but you have a geopolitical kind of technological arms race, right? Yeah. Different countries want AI for different things. So they're going to pass different laws.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's... I think Michael, as a rights owner, has to take a position. And he has done. I think Universal have been really front and center of it, which is a good thing. But to your question about how you protect against it as a rights owner, I think it's incredibly hard.
Yeah, I guess there's more of a question. Oh, great.
Please.
Hi, my name is Fiona from Music Team. We specialize in metadata. First of all, if all of the artists, creators, start using their IPI and their IPN number when they submit music through the DSPs, they will be identified as artists. A bot cannot have an IPI or an IPN number because they don't have a social instruments number, they're not registered with a performing rights organization or a CMO. So that the first step. Second step, if the industry on the distribution level stops accepting music that is not delivered with the proper identifiers, I'm talking RSRC, ISWC, IPN, IPI, ISNI, then we're going to start moving where there's a bit more protections towards physical artists. And then AI ain't different than sampling in the end. So it's again a legal battle that we've been facing in the past.
Yeah, an ongoing legal battle, right? Yeah. Because it's in the same sense that a sample can be obscured to the point that you could never realize that it was used, so too are the models here, and the data within the models is completely opaque.
I started music in a long time ago, working at a press and distribution company. We sold a lot of vinyl that was just basically acapellas, both sides, right? Like bootlegs, all of that stuff. Like, it's been a thing for a very long time. I think the difference here is just scale, right? There is a pressure point to, I think also part of the positioning is who's going to manage the, not necessarily the enforcement, but like preparing to who's going to manage the gates of being able to understand this stuff, figure out like what is or isn't, like what, like where that onus comes from. I think some of the rights owner position is about pushing that towards the platforms themselves as opposed to taking it upon themselves. I mean, I think you've seen takedown notices still work, right? Like, I mean, the Drake track came down. I mean, another one just went up, but yeah. So it's whack-a-mole, right? So I think there's a scale thing in terms of some of the positioning stuff that is starting to happen around like how everyone is positioning around trying to figure out what the rails are, right?
But if takedowns don't work, are we just going to see another example of the Napster era of just constant lawsuits for the next 5 years, and then we come to some kind of conclusion, which in that case was Spotify or streaming platforms?
I think that's gonna happen, yeah? I mean, that's always when new evolution of technology happens, then and then if, and something gets mainstream, then then the lawsuits start, and then we have to wait a few years, and then we have the first cases that gives us more feedback, yeah, and then the lawmakers catch up, and then we know better.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to your point about the geopolitical aspect, because even though we're talking about music, it does kind of tie in to the legislation, because there is an arms race for AI, right? We can all agree on that. No country wants to be there last. Everyone wants to get there first in order to own the space and therefore own all of the implications for healthcare, you know, more things out that are more important than music. Is that arms race going to affect the regulation of AI when it comes to copyright? Because no one wants to be the first to regulate. The floodgates are open. It kind of feels like even the UK government said last year, although they've backtracked on this, that they're going to allow anyone to train on any creative, any copyrighted material, because it would take too long to get licensed for everything you train on. So they've already said that's their intent. I think they've backtracked on that since. But is the kind of geopolitical aspect an influence here, an aspect to this?
But I think that intent's the bit we pick up. The intent is, how do you set up your territory, your area, from a geopolitical point of view, that money is going to flow in, that people and developers are going to come in, things are going to get built, the interest is probably drug discovery and a whole bunch of other things that are nothing to do with any of us. What we're effectively asking for is a carve-out for the creative industries. And I think, you know, like, so that's a separate thing, right? Like, so I think, you know, I do think, to Greg's point, like, the geopolitical thing is a big piece that's moving things, and we have a job to do in some of this defining legal framework to figure out, like, what do we want government to kind of do and where to intercede. How we then manage that across multiple territories is going to be interesting.
Yeah, big tech's kind of legacy approach is regulation trumps innovation, right? So given their lobbying history and their success of lobbying towards governments, can you see them carving out an exception for the creative industries anytime soon?
I think you guys might know more than me, but I think in the UK there is a select committee hearing going to happen about the creative industries really soon. So I think they're at least open.
I think it was influential, right? I think part of the reason why the British government pulled back from this kind of all-pervasive exception was because the creative industries successfully lobbied against it. So it is possible, for sure.
Cool. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about Music LM, which was Google's platform that they made, which is essentially was DALL-E 2, which was like the big cultural moment for AI, generative AI, for music. But they pulled back for ethical reasons. I just want to read you the quote that they put out when they decided not to release this model. It was, "We acknowledge the risk of potential misappropriation of creative content associated to the use case. We strongly emphasize the need for more future work in tackling these risks associated with music generation." So Google are aware, obviously, of the risks, just like we are. But for someone like OpenAI, who didn't have the history of regulation from the EU and regulation from the US and globally, does that mean that another upstart is going to come along and develop these models, and it's more likely to happen through another company that's less regulated? Is Google's fear of regulation the reason they didn't put this out in reality? Because there was no legal reason for them to keep it to themselves.
I mean, there already are companies. So Stable Diffusion has a division that's principally looking at music, Harmony. I don't think those are necessarily I don't think any of those are bad actors. Like, every AI music startup I've ever met, like, is largely filled and staffed with, even if they code, musicians, right? Like, I don't think these people are trying to bring down the music industry. The Google thing's interesting. Obviously, we got to see a little bit of it. Yep. We didn't get to see a lot of it. There's like a running gag in AI, which is, like, from a development point of view, if it doesn't work yet, it's AI. Like, so they got a lot of press at a time when, you know, there's a lot of heat on AI and generative AI and creative industries. That's not knocking Google. Google's done some really good work from a development point of view, to push what's possible in terms of technology for a long time, right? So I think it's hard to make a call about, like, exactly what the justifications were. I doubt they were legal. Probably about priorities and what they choose, which battles they want to choose, they want to fight.
Yeah, for me, the statement that you quoted for me is very nebulous. Yeah, so it can mean anything in the end. So we will have to wait. But I mean that's part of the upcoming regulation also in the European Union. Yeah, there's already for 2 years now. There is a draft of the EU AI Act being discussed. I think it's at the moment even almost done discussing in the European Parliament, or it's about to close the first version of it. And of course, one part of it is the transparency, yeah? And what all AI provider will face, that there need to be more transparent. In that draft, also the lobby groups influenced. We will see how good they did, but they tried to force AI developers also to be transparent about their data mining, and so rights holders can actually look into it and double check. Okay, what have you used legally or illegal? And we can get maybe some royalties out of it, yeah? So it will be regulated for sure, and not only in the creative industries, it will apply to all industries, of course. It's just funny that military will be accepted from the EU AI Act.
Yeah, don't worry about it, I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah.
I think talking about being able to know, understand the sources that these models are being trained on. You mentioned about the EU legislation is going to reveal the training data. Is that already a stipulation? And that, do you know for sure? Because that would be huge, right? But then wouldn't people just operate outside the EU if they didn't want to follow that law?
Yeah, I can't imagine that it will be completely transparent. There will be, depending on the AI project, there will be different risk levels. The EU talks about risk levels where they put in each AI project, and then it comes with different compliance rules and requirements you have to fulfill. Even ChatGPT now is considered as very high risk. We will see if that holds in the future. But anyway, but I can't imagine it will be completely transparent just to a certain extent, because in the end it's also the business secrets of those companies, and that needs to be protected as well. And as you asked initially, of course it's about commercial interests, and it's a run of different regions in the world who actually attracts investments, and of course the US are traditionally more offensive in protecting investments, also in copyright, than the European, where it's more about protecting the author or the artist, I would say.
Yeah. And Gregor, for representing a big law firm with a lot of lawyers, what's the kind of fears coming from the industry right now from people that your company represents? What kind of things are they panicking about?
Well, I think, again, going back to Universal, they say, which side of history do you want to be on?
And, big statement,
you know,
yeah.
In a big law firm, I want to be on every side of it. So, you know, we represent big artists, we represent record labels, represent DSPs. So, you know, the sentiment we're getting varies dramatically according to which part of the industry is interested. I think, certainly from the rights holder perspective, there's a natural concern. There's a natural anxiety about the fact that a viral track, that an AI-generated track could go viral, that AI-generated music could displace certain aspects of the music industry, most notably probably production music. So if you're a rights holder, you've got big concern about that. If you're an artist, you're concerned possibly, I mean, different artists have different views, but you're possibly concerned about being replicated. And that, you know, that's an obvious cannibalization of your revenue stream at best. And at worst, it's denigrating to your artistic persona. It's a problem. I think, personally, the law probably protects artists a bit more because you've got, you know, passing off style, Lanham Act style remedies. But it's, you know, as we've talked about, it's whack-a-mole, right? And then I think the most complex are the platforms or the technology companies, because they're a bit conflicted. They have relationships with the music industry that they want and need, and and cherish, and then they want to be at the forefront of technological innovation. And there's a, they have to. Your point about guardrails is exactly right. Through what framework do you do that?
I think, like, taking that last point, particularly about technology companies, I mean, one of the things in, I mean, I'm sure we've all seen it, but like a decade plus of working with certainly music tech startups and technology companies, or even advertising, like, most of these companies do not understand how music rights work, right? They don't start out going, I'm deliberately here to subvert the music industry or anything else. They just want to do a thing. I think one of the challenges and opportunities that we have is, music is increasingly more akin to software in so many ways, but how we produce things, how we distribute things, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at what's happening with AI, it's a direct response to lineage to like how people build software. People take compositable bits, they plug it in via APIs, and they build stuff. And they understand what they can do with those things and what they can't do with those things, and there are frameworks that manage all of those stuff. So when they hit music, they think, why can't I do the same, right? And I think one of the things interesting in the AI conversation is, one of the things that's potentially a risk is we spend all our time thinking about whack-a-mole and none of our time thinking about, like, how do we manage the distribution side of this stuff to enable the potential commercial upside and opportunity to happen. And I think, there's stuff we can learn from software, right? Like, I mean, software has various licensing models that allows things to get passed around.
Yeah, machine readable formats that will authenticate or let everyone know, hey, this is not for training. This is sacrosanct. It may be part of the solution. That's certainly what European law contemplates with the opt-out. There's this broad text and data mining exception, but that was dialed back, and rights holders have the ability to opt out of that. And then the question is, well, how do you do that? In machine-readable format may form part of the answer, I think.
Yeah, we've seen quite a few high-profile acquisitions of catalog in the past 5 years, especially by Hypnosis. Do you think they regret this purchasing of giant catalogs for a lot of money, given that things could be trained on them?
I really hope
quickly?
It continues.
Do you think we'll see a lot more artists selling their catalogs? Because their whole catalogs can be data mined, legally or illegally, and therefore their whole IP is available to everyone.
I mean, I've been waiting for this catalog gravy train to finish, and it shows no sign of ending, which is great, I think, in many respects. I don't think any acquirer will regret buying that catalog. I do think valuations are all over the place, particularly in the last year. I don't want to go too far off topic. It'll be interesting to see if AI-generated music or similar starts to impact the revenues of those catalogs. Who knows?
But there's also an opportunity in the sense of those catalogs are largely monetized through usage of those assets and that music. Sure. If there are ways to do stuff with that, that potentially is an area where that remains of interest.
Yeah, potential new revenue stream.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument to be made that they're more valuable because they can withhold that training data. Therefore, they're the gatekeepers of that content in the future.
Well, if you look at, say, what Holly Herndon did and talked about a couple of years ago, she built an entire chain using blockchain and a DAO from one end to how to build a way for her voice to be an instrument for people to be able to use, largely is sort of like a thought experiment and, like, how would you actually go about doing this, and did it end to end? But with the notion that, she is able then to, or the DAO is able to monetize the use of her and her voice and her likeness. I think someone brought it up on the panel before. I think one of the challenges with catalogs, there's only going to be so many, never heard before track from the grave that people are going to be interested in, right? That's going to get very tired very, very quickly. So I think it is about thinking about, what other things or other uses could be facilitated, or even just being able to use more catalog. Right, how do you streamline sync and licensing type stuff, present more opportunities, make it easier for people to access that type of content for doing other things? I think that's some of the opportunity space that we would be wise to be thinking about legal frameworks to support.
Yeah, on the previous panel, we were talking about Grimes and her tweet about 50% split of using the model of her voice. The question that still remains is, how is that split facilitated? And I think Duarte mentioned smart contracts. Is there anything, because we don't want to get into Web3, but is there anything off blockchain or off chain that might facilitate these splits in real time and automatically?
I mean, arguably, you could set up the system so it does it automatically, right? If you want to collaborate with an assistive, partly generative AI, then the rules could be established in the machine. So you would know from the outset, okay, the machine... I mean, it's such an absurdity, right? That because we talked about how different laws recognize machine-generated works. And the UK was actually far ahead in 86 because it was established that there could be a copyright that subsists in a machine-generated work, depending on... And the owner would be the person who instructs the machine. So there's a whole question around, with AI... and ownership or writer's share, well, is it the entity that creates the machine? Is it the person instructing the machine? Can you change those rules by contract? So is it in the terms of use that those rules are reversed? So I think it really depends. I think they could be any one of a number of permutations. And then there's the other question, which is, to what extent would that copyright be recognized? So You could have an AI that generates incredible hit after hit after hit, but if there's no copyright protection around that, well, so what? You know, would people get paid on it? And if they didn't get paid, could they enforce rights against anyone else?
Yeah. Just on your point, like, I think I say this as someone who's spent a lot of time building things in Web3, but like with most things with blockchain, there's probably a way to do it without blockchain, right? But there is a good question of like, where are things like, where is there potentially more scale or upside of using blockchain? So the thing I find interesting about what Grimes did and what Holly Herndon did is like, they've created like a self-contained way of facilitating a solution to this problem, right? And I think that's interesting, right? Because they're not waiting on a big body to make a massive decision to try and get everyone all on side to agree something. They're finding a way to basically make, you know, basically get from A to Z as expediently as possible. And I think, you know, that presents interesting opportunities, right?
But is that scalable?
I think for some of these artists, I mean, you know, is it... I mean, at the moment, I think the problem more is, like, is being an artist scalable at this point? We're asking some artists to do so many things that are related to the facilitation of, like, everything, from distribution to everything. So I think, you know, distribution at this point is near... click a button, right? It's pretty friction-free. So I think, no, at this point in time, I think, you know, that requires developers and various other things, but I don't think you would be a million miles in the future to have those sorts of tools be much more accessible in terms of use. It's just, you know, it's just an interesting instance of a bypass going around largely what everyone else is going to spend the next 10 years debating.
Yeah, but, I mean, call me cynical, but isn't that just another platform that then can gatekeep output of content? Great.
But in this context, I don't think a platform gatekeeping is the issue, right? The use case, just generally, or the challenge here is, like, you know, when you've got this, this throws into, like, talking, actually picking up what Gregor was saying, music production largely is an ecosystem, right? We have things where, you know, producer credits and numerous people will compete on them. What we're talking about here isn't million miles different. It's just the constituent parts of the ecosystem that create that music are very different, and we don't have rules for engagement, right? So I think that's the framing for me. I think a few people have talked about the us and them mentality of it is seriously problematic because it does two things. It, one, alienates the companies that potentially are able to deliver a lot of growth and help the industry transition to models that potentially allow us to do things the rest of the world is doing with software, like, very, very well. And I think opens up a lot of really interesting creative opportunities and business models and a whole bunch of things. On the flip side, it also puts us back in the crosshairs of basically fighting music fans and creators. My daughter's 16. She's grown up with TikTok. Her expectation with music is any song she likes, she can do something with, right? She's got no concept of most of the things we have a bias towards when we think about music. And I think this then highlights more of that. Like she needs, like, TikTok is interesting for her despite whatever challenges exist. Like, for her, it's a playground. She can do what she wants, right, within that walled garden. Like, how do we expand upon that and do things like that with AI? I think is an interesting place to be exploring through this kind of technology.
I guess that, and we talked about this in the previous panel too, but opening up your catalog to let fans create a new sense of fandom by doing new things with your music, be it using your voice or creating a dance on TikTok or whatever it might be. Also, artists then become content moderators because they don't want people to do everything with their voice, much like Grimes tweeted after she her original tweet, saying that, you know, there's going to be some frameworks around this. Is this just another can of worms around are people being able to, like, model your voice and, I mean, deepfake you and say things that go against your values?
For sure they will.
Yeah. Right? That, I mean, that is the thing that will be the thorny issue, right? Like, Drake makes a joke of it now, but if I did something that was deeply against Drake's personal politics right now, you could be sure the reaction would be not a joke, right? Like, so I think that is a totally relevant.
Well, people are deepfaking the Pope.
Yeah. I like that jacket.
Yeah, the balance. Yeah, that was a good jacket. Yeah.
But indeed, we can imagine that there will be a new revenue stream for personal rights, like exploitation of personal rights. I mean, until now. Revenue streams like this existed already with brand partnerships or whatever. So you give your image for a campaign or whatever, you get a check and that's it. But what we've seen now with this Drake example or others before, it needs potentially a kind of a platform and also a licensing system for personal rights and images, words, whatnot, where everyone can register. And actually set the rules, what is allowed to do with your voice, image, whatever. And then other platforms, that the AI tools that offer these things want to connect, they have to follow this license system. But literally everyone can make Drake voices, including content. Yeah?
Banging on and continue about this point about software, but that is how, like, you know, you code things for APIs, but, and, you know, you can programmatically build things in that restrict what people can do. The challenge we have is the more moral, ethical stuff we talk about, like we're talking around in terms of this, because, like, that you can't necessarily build in, right? You have to have a different model for being able to do that, and you have frameworks for being able to take stuff down, but you still have the whack-a-mole problem. So, like, how do you manage that? Martin's point about, like, you know, can you do it by, you know, effectively having the ingredients on the back of the box through every step of the process? Yes, your other alternative is, you know, can you disassemble and then run processes and build technology to do, you know, song similarity searching and various other stuff on assets that are out there? I mean, that seems over-engineered, but, like, potentially. I mean, right now, the solution will probably end up being, I'm going to search hashtag AI song, and I'm going to assume all of these things are just, yeah, they're infringing, right? And everything is infringing until proving otherwise will end up probably being the default model for quite a while.
I think the point about the ethics is really important, and we'll get onto that before questions. It just reminds me of social media's problems, where when everyone has access to a platform, and in this case, access to an artist's IP or multiple artists' IP, it's just the floodgates of content that's against their will, and social media still hasn't solved this problem, but this time it becomes even more personal because it's literally an artist's voice, not just theoretically but literally saying things. What kind of legal precedence is there to protect against, to allow some things to happen and to prevent other things from happening, because social media still has that problem?
Doesn't passing off cover some of that?
Yeah, I think there's a decent enough set of remedies there for artists, so you could have a good swing. I would quite happily take a case against someone doing that.
I mean, I think it's happened in advertising a lot, right?
Like, well, the Bette Midler estate sued the agency that produced the Ford ad for using a sound alike. Yeah. So I think there's a good precedent there.
And she won, we should say.
She won. Our firm represented Rihanna when her image was used without a license, even though she didn't own the copyright in the photograph. So there are legal precedents to support the idea that, you know, anything that imitates an artist would be actionable.
Okay, so one more question before we go to questions. I guess a very simple question is, where do you personally see it going, and where would you like it to go in terms of legislation and ethics with AI content? A simple one.
I think generally with AI, it's important that it's the discussion is made on the the discussions are on a high level, globally with the global community. I see even the United Nations actually has the obligations to talk about AI and set out the rules based on their fundamental UN rights, what AI is allowed to do and what not. I think that is massive important from a very global approach.
I'm going to sound like such a terrible person, but the answer is depends who I'm representing.
Love lawyers, don't we?
I mean, from a legal framework point of view, I mean, I would love for people take a more holistic view and let's not just focus on the distribution end of things. I think we're at a cusp of very interesting new ways of looking at music and non-static music particularly. So I think that would be great to be considered. I think also just hearing the voice of the creative industries, right? Because often it's been marginalized. I think we're in a good place for that. I think a lot of the stuff that's happened around streaming and various other things has meant there is a good platform for that conversation. And I think the last thing is we don't end up with something so complex it ends up being like a hung jury. Like we still haven't really figured out DJ mixes and got them properly online and digital. And you know, to end up in a similar kind of position of sort of stalemate over this sort of stuff, I think would be a real failing on all constituents' parts.
Nice one. Any questions? Straight up, John.
Hi, John Truelove. I'm a creator of long standing, also a publisher, and I sit on the board of the UK PRO PRS. A fascinating discussion here. One thing, and forgive me, I didn't catch the beginning of it, so you may have already touched on it, but I'd be interested in your thoughts on a more general issue with AI, which is the generation by certain parties of massive amounts of content with AI, flooding the DSPs, and then harvesting it through bot farms, thus diluting, by some accounts, a very significant percentage of revenue from the DSPs. Your thoughts on that?
I mean, we've dealt with that a lot, and it's a problem across DSPs that needs to be fixed, and I think the DSPs are largely committed to fixing it. There's a conflation of two issues in your question. One is the flooding of the market with AI-generated music, and I would argue, well, that's just market forces and fine. The bot farming and click fraud is a definite problem. I think everyone's committed to dealing with that.
So you're comfortable with there being, for instance, copyright and publishing in this automatically AI generated music?
John, you know I don't take personal positions on these things. Look, it's not about whether I'm comfortable with it. It's more about, I mean, there's a question, as we've discussed, about whether copyright would subsist in those works. Yeah. And I think that depends on how the AI has been used to generate the music. So in an extreme position where it is literally the click of a button, then there may not be any copyright in it. But then the question is, it's more a systemic problem around the distribution system. How is that recognized? I mean, there's a terrible problem with recognizing sound-alikes, tracks that are sped up. It's already happening, right? I don't think that's really AI. I think that's just fraud in a system that's spewing out loads of money, and there's always going to be bad actors.
Any more questions? Got one at the front. Oh, go on to the back, all good.
Sure. Hi, my name's Pete and I'm from AI Ship. A question to all of you. With the thing which Drake did recently, so obviously the track went up and they got 20 million streams in 2 days and they took it down, or UMG took it down. Do you think they missed a trick? It could have been the first fan-driven number one, first AI number one, or do you think they did the right thing? And do you think Grimes is doing the right thing by opening up her vocals?
I mean, the takedown's interesting, right? Because if you apply some law to it, you'd say, well, what does Universal own, right, in that context? Universal isn't saying that they own that song. They're not saying that they can't take the anti-impersonation legal route because they don't own Drake's voice. Drake owns Drake's voice. So I think it's really an exertion of market power. They're saying, I'm a key supplier to you. This is damaging and harming my artist and my revenue, and please make it stop.
It's worth pointing out the takedown actually happened due to a producer tag sample, not the actual likeness of Greg. That's how they got around it. I'm pretty sure the ones that got uploaded took the tag out and then it's still up. So
yeah. I think also there's, to your point about more the marketing point, I think like the general theme with a lot of AI rhetoric, I think major rights owners would like it to slow down, right? So I think, yeah, you could, but like what would be the win? It's very, very short term. I think you can't also detach it from there is a bigger conversation about like what is the monetization model that predominates for recorded music works. And that touches on John's point about like, you know, how is that share of ear getting eaten by all this content? So I think there's just more to it. Like I think from that point of view, on the Grimes point, yeah, I think it's super interesting. I think, you know, it's very interesting. And I think you need artists that can pushing the envelope of what's possible, because I think it helps raise a very different type of conversation in sort of the more public sphere about like how we could do things and just gets us all thinking a lot sharper.
Nice one. Well, we are just about out of time, so sorry about that. But yeah, give it up for our panelists. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode from the IMS Ibiza 2023 podcast series. Remember to subscribe and follow to keep up with the latest content. And for more information on IMS, head over to internationalmusicsummit.com.